Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to Indigenous Voices on Now Time Radio.
Welcome to the United Religions Initiative, Global Indigenous Initiative, and Now Time Radio's presentation of Indigenous Voices. Indigenous Voices airs every other Thursday on Now Time Radio at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. Indigenous Voices features Indigenous artists, activists, wisdom keepers, and spiritual leaders raising their voices to bring messages from an Indigenous perspective on cultural heritage, women and children, the environment, our relationship to Mother Earth, preservation of sacred sites, human rights, spirituality, religion, and interfaith. The United Religions Initiative is a global grassroots interfaith network that cultivates peace and justice by engaging people to bridge religious and cultural differences and work together for the good of their community and the world. To join the call during Indigenous Voices on Now Time Radio, call 424-243-9656. You may also live stream or listen to the podcast at any time at www.blogtalkradio.com/Now Time Radio.
Welcome, everyone, to our show today. I am very excited. I have two very special guests, and we're going to get right into our program. I want to begin, first of all, by introducing Don Frew, Elder Don Frew, and Elder Rachel Watcher.
Hello.
Elder Watcher has been a practicing witch all of her adult life, and a Wiccan for more than 30 years, the past 20 years as an elder. She is an active member and frequent trustee of her own national organization, Covenant of the Goddess. Her primary work is in communication, focused on audio, visual, and journal production. She has edited several pagan journals over the years and is currently transferring them from other historical documents onto digital media, making them available for future research. Dawn Frew is an elder and member of the Covenant of the Goddess. He is America Wiccan, national and international interfaith work and scholarship. He is recognized for in not only the Covenant of the Goddess, but also in the United Religions Initiative and many, many other organizations, as we will talk about in a moment. I want to begin by welcoming both to the show today, and thought we might begin with the question, what is paganism, and is that related to Wicca, and in what way, and how does that relate to Indigenous Voices? So why don't we begin with a welcome to Don. Welcome to the show, Don.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Oh, it's good to have you. I apologize for our delay. We had a power outage just as the show was getting ready to start here.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So, Dawn, we've been working on projects together with the United Religions mm-hmm. Initiative, and I know that in some of the conversations that we've had and groups that we've met with, the subject of Wicca comes up in relationship to what is Wicca and what is paganism and how does that relate to the indigenous of the world. Can we talk about that?
Well, all of these terms have both broad uses and narrow uses. And pagan in the broad sense is any nature-relating, polytheistic, indigenous tradition around the world and throughout time. That's a big label. It can include ancient Egyptian religion, modern Hinduism, indigenous traditions, things like modern Wicca. In the narrow sense, it's increasingly being used to describe just the modern movement of people reconstructing and reviving pre-Christian traditions from around the Mediterranean and Europe. So that's a broad and a narrow sense. Wicca has the same issue. The largest group of modern, in the narrow sense, pagans are what are called neo-pagan witches. And those are people who are reviving a concept that came out of Britain, which really came out of the fusion of Anglo-Saxon religion and Celtic religion and Roman religion in the United Kingdom. But there's other kinds of witches out there. They're not just ones coming out of Britain. There's like Strega coming out of Italy, for example. And Wicca is a British term. It's an Anglo-Saxon term. And so strictly, Wicca only refers to those modern witches that are coming out of a British tradition. But as the movement grew, a lot of people found that it was easier to explain to your parents what you were doing by using one W word in place of another W word, and started using Wicca just in place of witch to make things easier. And so increasingly around the world, the modern witchcraft movement and Wicca are synonymous. Hello?
Yes, I'm sorry, Dawn. I'm here. Rachel's calling in on Skype.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
And in relation to the indigenous origins, I mean, like I said, when you talk about a fusion originally of Celtic, Anglo-Saxon, and Roman sources, the Celtic sources are all the tribal religions of the West in Western Europe. The Anglo-Saxon sources are the tribal religions of Northern Europe. And then the Roman sources are that amazing melting pot of cultures from all around the Mediterranean that reach, you know, south into sub-Saharan Africa and east into India and north into Central Europe, Central Asia, all getting pulled together into that really multicultural, you know, cosmopolitan world that was the Roman Empire. So all of these things combine to meld indigenous traditions from around the world with philosophy, you know, and you get this sort of interesting melange that is modern witchcraft.
So when we say modern witchcraft or neo-pagan,
or Wicca,
so that means you're combining the new and the old, or is it more putting a modern spin on?
Well, there's an awareness that we don't live in the past. You know, we don't live many of us don't live in the land of our ancestors. We don't live in small villages that are connected by blood. We don't live in places where animal sacrifice would be a perfectly ordinary thing to do. And so we draw inspiration from the past about how to relate to the world in a spiritual way, how to encounter the divine in and through the natural world. But we're adapting it to the modern age. We have to make it meaningful to the modern life and engage with the issues that are of import to us today. A large part of the drive for that was people living in modern cities and feeling very disconnected from nature and wanting a way to reconnect through the observation of the seasons and the cycles of the sun and moon and connecting with the Earth Mother herself in that way.
Very interesting. You know, I was, of all places, I was at the doctor's office last week, and a young lady was sitting in the waiting room. And somehow the conversation around religion came up, and she says, well, I'm Wicca. I said, oh, and I said, asked her to talk about her, you know, how she became involved in Wicca and whether she was studying with someone and had an opportunity to refer her to the Covenant of the Goddess website. So I hope she heard that, because it was the very thing that you were saying, that religion didn't really work for her in the traditional sense. And but yet whenever she was in nature, that's where her heart song came alive.
And it's important to understand that the Covenant of the Goddess is a networking group. It's not a church or a religion. It doesn't represent only one kind of modern witchcraft. So people there will find resources to lead them into whatever form of modern Wicca is appropriate for them.
Right. So let's talk about some of the stereotypes and the divination that happens. We find that in a lot of the world's traditional cultures and spiritual practices. What is the origin of the bad, you know, all the bad energy that goes out there whenever, you know, people talk about Wicca, witchcraft? When I say bad energy, how people relate to it, which I think has a lot to do with, you know, that whole switch from matriarchal to patriarchal. But I'm sure you could explain that better.
Well, you know, what's funny for someone of my age, I'm 53, and when I was growing up, witches had a pretty good rep. You know, there was the Glinda the Good Witch of the North and the Wizard of Oz, and Bewitched was the most popular show on television, and things were looking pretty good. And then we went into the dark days of people being concerned about satanic ritual abuse and thinking that anything odd was connected with that somehow, and now we're coming out the other side of it. But historically, the problem arose with the Christianization of Europe. And it's a saying among anthropologists and historians of religion that the gods of the old religion become the demons of the new, that when you're trying to move into an area and convert people, what you can, you absorb, like the holidays of the old religion become saints' days in the new religion. Sacred places become places you put churches. But some of those, and some of the gods you can absorb and become saints, but others just don't work. And so those become characterized as demons or devils. And the old image of Pan in the Greek context, you know, the god of the woods with the goat horns and the legs, and in the West a very similar god called Cernunnos with antlers, is just too hard to absorb those. And so those got characterized as being devils or demons. And the practitioners of the old ways, who, using the old word Wicca, were like herbalists, midwives, healers, people that would help you get in touch with the land, those became stigmatized as being devil worshippers. And to this day, when Rachel and I will travel around the world and talk to local practitioners of nature religions, many of them were told in their schools that before the coming of Christianity, Europeans worshipped demons. You know, and they were never told that there was a nature spirituality in Europe before Christianity. And so we're in the process of reclaiming that and in the process of explaining to our brothers and sisters around the world that what they've been told about the history of Europe isn't really accurate, and that they need to understand the term witch in a different way. And in that way, Wicca has really helped us, because historically they may have been told that their word for some nasty person who casts curses, but the English word for that is witch, and that further continues the oppression. But if they first encounter us under the name Wicca, all they know is we're some other religious group, and then in talking to them, we can explain about the problem with witch and the translation. And it becomes an instance of shared oppression, you know, something that we can actually bond over.
Right, right. And just so that I'm clear in my making sure I'm connecting history correctly, doesn't the stigma go back to like the Inquisition and so forth, or would you consider that to be something different?
Well, that was the very aggressive side of the Christianization of Europe.
Yeah.
And actually, you know, the Inquisition was mostly concerned with heresy, mostly concerned with different kinds of Christians who were practicing in ways that the church did not agree with, or it was aimed also at Jews to a great extent. But very often when examples of the old religion were still being practiced among the people, the Inquisition would also go after that. But the witch persecutions were actually historically much nastier in the Protestant countries than in the Catholic countries. The witch hunts were much more of a problem in Protestant Europe. The Catholics seemed much more concerned with heresy,
right?
With being someone being the wrong kind of Christian.
Well, what I'd like to do, you gave me three songs, and what I would like to do is play one of the songs now. I was thinking maybe Burning Times, and then we can talk about. Song is significant to our conversation today, and we'll get to each of the three songs, and then I'd like to spend some time making the connection. You and I both, as current, of course, are aware, but I think making the connection on a broader sense, going back to the nature aspect out of which a Wicca came, witchcraft and paganism, that really connects all traditional practices in the world together. So let's start with Burning Times, and then we can talk about that and move forward. Does that sound okay with you, Don?
Sure. Do you think I should explain the context first or afterwards?
Okay. Well, why don't we do it first then? Go ahead.
Okay. When you asked me for some songs, these are ones that were particularly moving to me. But they came out of the early days of the modern pagan movement in the United States. And early on, people were wrestling with being a minority religion, with having a Christian overculture that often didn't understand, that often persecuted. And so there was a real power in forming identity. And these songs come out of that, about defining us as different from the Christian community and as coming out of this long period of oppression. And there's a lot of personal feeling and passion in that. But fortunately nowadays, as you know from the work we do in Interfaith, the world is a lot more accepting of what we do. And these particular songs would not be written today because the circumstances are different. But they came out of a time of great passion in the movement when we were really struggling to assert ourselves as an alternative religion.
Okay. So I'm going to, this is Burning Times.
Yeah.
Women were dying to be free.
Now the earth is a witch, and the men still burn her, stripping her down with mining and the poisons of their war. Still to us, the earth is a healer, our teacher, our mother. She's the weaver of a web of life that keeps us all alive. She gives us the vision to see through the chaos. She gives us the courage. It is our will to survive. Diana, Hekeda, Demeter, Kali, Inanna. Isis, the star, 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 Diana, Hekeda, Demeter, Kali, Inanna.
Welcome back to Indigenous Voices on Now Time Radio, where my guests are Elders Don Frew and Rachel Watcher. Just before we heard this, Rachel, this particular song, we were talking about the journey to where we are today in terms of Wicca in the world and how it's no longer in the closet. I would like to bring you into the conversation at this point and see if there are any comments that you would like to make about historically where we've come with Wicca and the renewal of neo-paganism in the world and how that relates to indigenous cultures from a global perspective.
That's a very good question. Am I being heard?
Yes, yep. Absolutely.
Oh, good, good. I wasn't certain. I was caught by surprise a bit here. I think that the fact that neo-pagans are willing to stand up or were willing to stand up in the 60s, 70s, and 80s saying because they came from a more secure point of view sociologically, they were more willing to stand up. And also I think the 60s and the whole reactionary movement of the time allowed them to be able to stand up and say, hey, we're different, we're not Christian, we're not from the Abrahamic or Levantine religions, and you need to listen to us also. I think that provided a door for indigenous people to walk through also and say, hey, you know what, we've been here even longer, and our voices also need to be heard.
Absolutely. I know that as I look at information on, particularly on the Covenant of the Goddess website, which is very good, a very good website, cog.org, but a lot of one of the references that I saw that I could be in any place in the world in the traditional culture, you know, I've traveled around the world escorting elders with the Worldwide Indigenous Science Network and been able to be in so many different ceremonies. And as I was reading the information there, I could just change the name and I would be, you know, in Togo or Benin in West Africa or in Polynesia or South America. So I wanted to know if you could talk a little bit about the significance of goddess in the Wicca tradition and the whole concept of the connection with Mother Earth or Mother Nature and the cosmos and sort of the interconnectedness of all life. And I'll throw that out there to either one of you who may wish to answer the question first.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Don.
Okay. Just let me follow up on the song for that reason. The song made the point that it was about a woman, you know, the healer and the teacher. There's an awareness that in the past women held much greater positions of authority and knowledge in people's spiritual lives, and that that was one of the things that got sort of stamped out. And so in the modern movement, there's a real desire to hear the voices of women, and many groups are led by priestesses. Many groups are focused primarily on the goddess. They may also have the goddess and a god. But there's this awareness of the divine manifesting as the earth, and the earth is our mother. So there's a real awareness of feminine energy, of feminine aspects of the divine, and the, of the importance of the participation and the voices of women in contrast to sort of the overculture. And also in that song, there was the point where it said, for us, the earth is a woman. There's always historically been a connection between the earth and women, and a connection between the oppression of women and the oppression of the earth. You know, environmentalism has, and feminism have always gone hand in hand. In cultures where one is oppressed, the other is also. And there's an awareness that, that both of these things have to be addressed together. So that, I think, is something that the neo-pagan movement, Wicca in particular, have brought to the table. And we see that all over the world, people are hungry for this. They're aware. I mean, it's obvious the environmental problems that we're facing with global climate change. And they're saying, what have we done wrong and what can we do about it? And all the religions that come forward with a message of, well, the first thing you have to do is relate to the earth spiritually. And part of that is relating to the earth as a mother, and part of that is valuing women. So we bring that to the table. And that many, many, many groups are doing that. But I think because Wicca was born out of the modern West, we know how to play that game better than a lot of the other groups. We know how to talk corporate. We know how to use Robert's Rules of Order and all of that. And so sometimes we can get the message in the door first, and then others can come with us and speak up. So, you know, I think there's a way in which we're riding the crest of a wave, you know, a movement that's sweeping religion all around the world. And I wanted to comment on what you just said about being anywhere in the world and how you could just change the names. We found that, Rachel and I, in Interfaith, is that we can sit down with a Hindu and a Taoist and an indigenous person and talk about doing ceremony together, and there's no arguments, there's no issues. We, in a lot of cases, we'll do things exactly the same way, and in a lot of cases, we'll do things very differently, but it doesn't matter. You know, we all feel the same heartfelt connection to the natural world, and that may express itself in doing things somewhat differently, and that's okay. And that kind of fluidity of belief and practice is why, as far as I know, and I'll say there may always be an exception out there, none of the pagan or nature religions have ever fought wars of religion with other nature religions. With that kind of awareness that the divine has to be at least as diverse as the nature that it's manifesting through, allows us to accept difference, you know. And
absolutely,
in a global village, in a world that's dealing with globalization, accepting of difference is at the core of getting along.
Yeah, I noticed the term interconnectedness of all life, and and that certainly speaks to, you know, of all the programs that we've done, certainly with Indigenous Voices, but all of the work in my life that I've done, particularly in the area of the indigenous communities, it always starts with relationships, you know, and that relationship just isn't with another human being, but it's with all of life, whether you're talking about the heavens or nature, even stones, you know, it's everything that is here for us, and we have an opportunity to relate to it as a part of our divine essence. But tell me a little bit about the god. Now, you talk about the goddess. What's the masculine aspect? How is that related to in Wicca?
Well,
well,
if
I just talked about the goddess, why don't Rachel talk about the god?
Okay. I was going to say, in relationship to that, we believe it. Many of us, not everyone, but many of us are monists, and we believe that there is one great unknown, but that it's bigger than just male or female. It's bigger than just you or me as individuals. It is the all. And as we go back, and Don and I, especially in our travels as interfaith representatives, and we meet with Indigenous peoples, we find that in general, though it's often expressed in different forms, this same idea exists. And you find, especially with the South American Indigenous people, they must act in concert, male and female. There must be partners, and even if you are an individual by yourself, as a female, some gentleman will come up and offer to partner with me in order to do a ritual or a particular process, because it's done male and female. And we believe that these are parts of a whole. One of the reasons I think that emphasis was originally put on the goddess is that emphasis in a patriarchal society had been lost, and it was important for us to seek it in some way and bring it forward. But we find, once again, going back to more traditional practices, that there was always a balance there. I was talking with Jake Swamp, what a tragic loss it was to the community to lose him. But he was explaining how his in his tradition, the women choose the leaders. They don't lead themselves, but they are the ones that choose them. And should a leader step out of line, the women will take them back again. And he told some very amusing stories of women stepping forward and saying, "You out of the governing pool, right now." And so they kept their own matter of checks and balances that way. And I believe that we've come from the point now of needing to insert the female again into, for most of us, finding a balance, a new balance between the male and female energies, because each of us have male-female energy within us. Men find the feminine side of nurturing in families, and women find the masculine side of nurturing, especially in this day and age, and going out into the business world, the corporate world. And we call upon those energies for whatever job we need to do. So it exists within each one of us, and it's a matter of bringing both of those energies into our rituals and recognizing them and the place that they hold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, you're reminding me.
And for a lot of people, I was going to say, for a lot of people, when we talk about focusing on the balance of male and female energies, for some people it's easy in their minds to let that slide into heterosexism, that, oh, you're talking about you must have male and female couples to do things. And I was talking to someone about that, and I said, you know, living in the San Francisco Bay Area, we've come to learn that, yes, having that balance of energies is a much more complex thing than external gender.
Yeah.
You know, we all carry
those
energies within us. We all relate to them in different ways, you know, and you don't have to just have a man and a woman to have both those energies represented.
No, and as a matter of fact, Don brings to mind an instance in which we wanted both energies represented, another woman and I who were working, and so she asked me to take on the God energy, and it was quite an experience for me. He came down fully and completely, and that was interesting.
Oh, I can imagine. I want to ask a question also. I was thinking we could talk a little bit about the practice that's associated with witchcraft or Wicca. I know that sacred space is really, really important in most traditional groups, and I know it's also because I've been around you, and I know how important establishing sacred space is and honoring of the circle. Can we talk a little bit about that in relationship to the worship of the goddess and gods within the context of Wicca?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Go ahead.
Well, different practices approach this question in different ways. In one tradition that I work in, the emphasis is on turning the wheel and the fructification of the year and the fertility of earth and its abundance. in the representation of male and female. In another tradition that I work in, the emphasis is on the gods and our contract with them to honor them and recognize them, and in return, they're seeing that we have what we need. So emphasis is different in different traditions, and with so many young people out there practicing to their own specifications, I'm not certain that I can speak to it in any greater depth than that. So depending on what ritual you're doing, it's very fluid. Don, can you add to that?
Yeah, one thing I would say in relation to that is that there's, you know, many of the modern religions meet in squares. You know, they meet in boxes. And that's very much, and to me, that's very much an imposition of a human shape onto a natural environment. Whereas a lot of the indigenous traditions and the traditions that feed into modern Wicca look to the natural world for inspiration. And we see that the heavens move around us in circles. The stars, the sun, the moon all move in circles, and so we tend to meet in circles as a way to help connect us with the earth and with the environment. And we notice that in the northern hemisphere, they move clockwise, and so our ritual motion in circle is clockwise. We notice that standing on the earth, that there's sort of a fixed point to the north and south, and then we have things rising in the east and setting in the west, and so we address four directions in our circles. And so there's a lot of looking to the natural world to tell you how the universe is created at a cosmic level to then guide us in the creation of sacred space in a microcosmic level for when we do ceremony, when we do ritual. And that's true for indigenous traditions all over the world.
Well, I was going to say, and what we're finding more and more is that groups are adapting to their physical location there in any particular place. So, for instance, here on the West Coast, a group might recognize water in the West, where if we move to the East Coast, they would be more likely to recognize water in the East. And we found some of our Australian brothers and sisters are doing some very interesting things in that way also. Some of the celebrations that we hold up here regarding summer, they hold at exactly the opposite time of the year because for them it's the opposite time of the year. Yeah. So it's very adaptable in that way.
Rachel and I had the interesting experience of being in Peru and traveling with a number of indigenous tribal people who asked us to do one of our ceremonies for them. And on the one hand, we're thinking, well, okay, here's how one of our ceremonies would go. But on the other hand, the point of the ceremony is to relate to the natural world. And down here, things go in the opposite direction. And so we were trying to both be true to the way we practiced, but also adapt it on the fly so that it would express to people, here's how we use ceremony to connect to the natural world. And here, the natural world is different than it is for us at home. So it was challenging.
Oh,
it was interesting.
Interesting. Well, we're certainly going to have an opportunity to have some real interesting experiences as we are with the United Religions Initiative, Global Indigenous Initiative, preparing to bring Indigenous wisdom keepers from around the world to particularly be in ceremony together. So I'm really excited about how we will all relate to that experience. But I also wanted to talk about, and before we leave this topic, sacred space. And I hear that a lot. People say, well, we have to establish sacred space before we start any gathering. How important is that, and what happens when that isn't done?
Well, that's a good question. many of us carry sacred space within us. And it becomes, as you know, Audrey, we live our spirituality. It's not something that we put on Sunday or put on a particular day of the week or a particular time, we live into it. So it's constantly with us and within us. So for me, and I can only speak for me, sacred space is nice, but it's not urgent. It's not absolutely mandatory for me to create a ritual because the sacred space is within me, and I can push those boundaries wherever I need them. Sacred space is particularly nice when you're working with a group of people because it sets a mindset in which we can all work and to which we can all relate. Don, did you have more to say on that? I'm sure you do.
That's exactly the point, is that pretty much all of the ceremony, the words, the gestures, the tools, are to allow different people to be focusing together, to be finding a common ground and to be focusing on the same goal, both focusing on what you want and putting aside what you don't want to be influencing what you're working on. So an individual may work entirely without words, entirely without tools. But whenever you get a group of people together, everyone's coming with different assumptions, different expectations, and the creation of a shared sacred space puts everyone in a mindset of trying to bring the best of themselves to the conversation, trying to find commonality, trying to share from the heart, and trying to relate to their own spiritual source. So it becomes essential when working in groups, and especially in interfaith, when you're working in groups of people that are coming from all sorts of different backgrounds and different assumptions. So in the interfaith work we do, that's why sacred space is just essential.
Yes, when I was traveling with Mr. Makua from Hawaii, who is now an ancestor, and I just really feel filled up in my heart whenever I even mention him, one of the things that we found is that when we would start any practice where we were all coming together to affect whatever it was in a particular space, his response was to put us under what he called a sacred kapu, which is basically a sacred order. And it was relating what both of you said in terms of bringing that sacred space inward, but then being able to align every action that we took as we moved forward in that sacred order, on that sacred path to affect for the work that was at hand, that we were always moving in the flow of that level of protection. And he would say the three things that were most important in that process is to love all that you see, including yourself, live what you feel, and know what you possess. And that was what we did within that energy, whether we were traveling around the world or whether we were doing ceremony in an ancient Hawaiian way while in Hawaii. So thank you for your comments. And we've had some very interesting things happen when we were not in alignment with the sacred intention of what we were doing, and we would always see the shadows show up. And I guess that's part of, I guess I would relate it to the coyote in the Native American tradition as well. So the shadow was a great teacher.
Yes.
They certainly can be.
I just got disconnected. I don't know if you can hear me.
Yeah, yes. I hear you now, Don. Yes.
Okay. I got reconnected. Good. Okay.
Yes. Rachel, was there something you were getting ready to say about that?
No, we have our own tricksters, and they they can make themselves well known in ritual if everybody is not in a constant mindset. Such things as lit candles tipping over and wine being spilled on a white carpet, and they can make themselves quite well known in their unhappiness if we don't take care of that.
But we also have a tradition that when you relate to the natural world in a personal relationship, that's a two-way experience. You know, that you're speaking to and making offering to the natural world, but it's speaking back. And so often when things happen, like the candle tips over or there's a sudden gust of wind or something like that, we stop to pay attention to it. I say, what is that telling me? You know, what's going on? Is there insight here? Is there wisdom here? You know. So it's important to be paying attention to one's environment in that way.
You know, I remember when we were in San Francisco together not too long ago for the multi-region gathering of the leadership team. And remember that night you had three things that happened on your way to the restaurant where we were having dinner. And when you got there, I remember you saying, you know, when it happens three times, you got to stop and pay attention.
Yeah.
Well, a friend of ours once said, once is a fluke, twice is coincidence, three times is somebody trying to tell you something.
Yeah. Okay, so on that note, let's listen to our second song, which is Spirits. And I want to make sure on our first song, Burning Times, that I mentioned the singer there was Charlie Murphy. And so now we're going to listen to Spirits. And is there anything you wanted to say before I play that?
The context of this is a woman who's about to be executed for witchcraft talking to the elements about both to help her through the experience, to have it be a teaching, a warning experience for her daughter, and to reconnect her with the earth.
Okay, well, we're going to listen to a song, Spirits.
Spirit of the waters, soothe away my anger, for I am soon to leave here in great fear and pain. Surround me with thy beauty, if it please thee that I might lose my fear of the flames. Spirit of the fire, hear me when I cry, for I am soon to and leave a daughter to mourn. Let me burn brightly, if it please thee, that she might see my light and be born. Spirit of the air, lift my ashes quietly, so high above that gathering, then let them fall again. And this shall be a sign, if it please thee, that I shall be returning on the north wind. Spirit of the earth, I give my body to thee, oh, let my bones scattered be among the growing things. Then let the forest grow, if it please thee, or this place of death and suffering.
Well, very powerful song there, Don. Is there anything you want to say about that?
Just the first time I heard both this and Burning Times, one is almost as one piece. One led into the other. And it was a very powerful time for me. I think many in the audience were weeping at the end of it. And I'm very glad that days are different. I mean, it's amazing to think that this much change can happen in so short a time, that Rachel and I can remember times when it was dangerous for people to be out publicly, that people could lose child custody or have homes set on fire, lose jobs.
I almost lost
things
my
like
job.
That on a fairly regular basis, to now when, you know, we're not just participating, but on the boards of, you know, the larger interfaith organizations, and prominent on the world scene of religions. And so to go from that degree of living in the shadows to the current degree of acceptance and influence that we have now in such a short time is just amazing. You know, it's something I very much value.
Absolutely. Rachel, I heard you say you almost lost your job.
Oh, yeah, yes. Mm-hmm. I had two issues that came up. One, I was officiating at a funeral, and the family showed up at my work. They had some issue that they felt was important enough. They apologized, but they showed up at my work, and it came out that I was a witch. And my boss went to the coworker who shared my working space, sort of a two cubicles in a space, and said that she would remove her from the cubicle if she felt it necessary, and that that she felt that this was in Nevada, and she felt that perhaps I didn't belong working in this group. Now, the interesting thing about that was that the girl who shared my cubicle, though she was a devout Catholic, she was Filipino, and her grandfather was a shaman. And it was through her grandfather's magic that she even came to the United States. And she stood up for me, and she said, no, she said, not only do I not wish to be removed from her cubicle, I don't think that, you know, it's not right that you let her go. She's doing her work, you know, she's doing a good job and a one that you'd have to hire somebody to fill again, and that's ridiculous. And it was, so I kept my job. The second situation that happened actually happened here in California, and a student somehow found out that I was a witch, and I'm not quite certain how, because it's not, it wasn't public information, but he went to his parents who demanded that I be removed from the school, and it was a major issue. Fortunately, it was California, and it was handled quietly, not with such big fanfare. It was also much earlier days, and they wouldn't have had the fanfare that they have now about these things anyway. But the principal finally said, you know, we are a division of church and state. You know, Miss Watcher has never shown any propensity to influence children in any way. Most of her students love her. And, in fact, my classes all showed up at the hearing to testify in my behalf, which was really sweet because they had no voice whatsoever. But the fact that all my students were willing to stand for me, I think, actually did help. And I kept my job. So that was twice when I was actually really put on the front line of this whole situation.
And, you know, the fact is, the people that are loud, the people that like are on television denouncing groups like ours, the people, the conflicts that are sometimes in the press, those are the exceptions. You know, those are the loud people. The fact is, we've experienced, you know, innumerable Christians of, and people of other religions who are extremely supportive and are insistent that we be present at the interfaith table. So we're, you know, we're very pleased to discover and gratified that we have so many friends within the mainstream religions that are very, very supportive of our being there.
Yeah, I think that's wonderful. I could say that from where I live, which is very much in the Bible Belt of Southeast America, we haven't gotten there yet. But we certainly begin to, and when I say that, it's not just at Wicca, but it's anything that is not of the Bible in quotation. So we have a ways to go, and we're just beginning to see, and probably 20 years behind you all, we're just beginning to see an organized interfaith council in our community, and so I'm very excited about that. You know, it may sound like a very small step, but that certainly begins to open the mindset of the community to how other faiths and other traditions can relate to one another and actually have an opportunity to share. So we're not quite there, Don and Rachel. We're working it out, and that's something we have to deal with when we do ceremony, even Native American ceremony or African ceremonies. Right. We have to be very concerned about you know, where we do it in terms of and then who we invite in. And we try to keep inviting more and more people in so that they have an opportunity to see that the most important aspect of it is what we talked about in the very beginning, reconnecting with Mother Earth, reconnecting with the cosmos, turning inward and finding that space of interconnectedness that is so important to how we now move on Mother Earth at a time when we really have to change the way we as a global family relate to Mother Earth.
Well, and you're right, Audrey. It may be a small step, but it is a step. And that's so important because with steps come movement. And, you know, our organization is going to be meeting in Atlanta, Georgia in August.
Oh, wonderful. Please let me know.
The theme for the meeting this year is interfaith too. So maybe there's some connections we can make there.
Oh, absolutely. I would love that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm aware that we're moving, getting close to the end of our hour. I actually booked more time than an hour because I had a feeling we might go over. What I wanted to do here is play We Won't Wait Any Longer. And Don, would you want to set this song up? And then we'll begin to open the, just open the mic for you to, each of you to express whatever you may want to as we're beginning to come to the end of our time here on Indigenous Voices.
But yeah, any comments? I just want to say once again, this comes out of the early days of the modern pagan movement and was definitely an expression of, you know, we're back, we're here, we're not going away. But it's both the pagan movement and also voices for the earth, you know, and it is equally valid now as an speaking, you know, when we talk about speaking back to hate, speaking back to hatred of towards the earth, speaking back to, you know, raping and pillaging of the earth. I think it fits into that context just as well.
Yeah, speaking back to those who would deny that we're having problems here, you know.
Yeah.
Speaking back
mm-hmm.
to those who would like to say, no, there's nothing wrong. The earth is still ours to do it as we please, to that, you know, claim that God gave us the earth to do it as we please. We're speaking back to those people.
And there was a time where this was known as the pagan national anthem.
Yes.
Any longer, we are stronger than before. We have trusted no man's promise, we have kept to just ourselves. We have suffered from the lies in all the books upon your shelves. And our patience and endurance through the burning times and now have given us the strength to keep our vow. We won't wait any longer, we are stronger. Have grazed away the heather and have raised the sacred grove. You have driven native peoples from the places that they love. Though your greed has been unbounded, you have felt the pangs of shame every time you trod upon the mother's name. We won't wait any longer, we are stronger. Had destroyed the memory of the ancient way. Still the people light the bale fire every year on solstice day. And on Beltane Eve and Samhain, you can find us on the hill, invoking once again the triple will. We won't wait any longer, we are stronger. But dispersed among the nations of the world, we linger on. Now the time has come to take the sacred cauldron of rebirth and fulfill our ancient pledges to the earth. We won't wait any longer. We are stronger.
as we come to this time in our show where we think, have we said everything there is to say? And, of course, the answer is always no. But I'd like to give each of you an opportunity to speak without a question prompted from me, but just what's in your heart that you would like to share on Indigenous Voices today. So why don't we start with Elder Rachel Watcher.
Well, you know, all I can say is that even though I think when we started in the early 60s, and I'm sure way back in the 50s, when a few people were practicing, I'm sure they thought that they were alone in what they were doing, or perhaps returning to something that was ancient and lost in the interim. But I think that the more I practice with other people, the more I work with Hindus, with Jains, with Indigenous folks from the Americas, the more I discover that what we're doing is actually identical to what they're doing, and that we don't find any differences, which I believe is what Don said earlier. And it clarifies in my mind the fact that as a witch, I am returning to the ways of my own people who happen to be Nordic, and what they must have been practicing before the onset of the Abrahamic traditions. And it's an affirming thing for me. It's an affirming concept in my life that I am doing what surely my ancestors must have done, at least in part. I mean, obviously we don't practice some of the rituals they were practicing, but for today's time and place, I think that this is, they would have been comfortable here doing what we're doing.
Don?
I completely agree with what she just said. A number of times in Interfaith, I've had people ask me, you know, what message do we bring? What message do the witches bring to the world stage? And I think the message that we bring is to remember the focus on the immanence of the divine. That the divine isn't just out there somewhere, like up in the clouds or something, or beyond the heavens. That the divine is right here. That it's inside all of us. It's inside each other. It's inside the natural world, but also, you know, our tables and our floors and our walls and our carpeting and our pencils, everything. And that if you really take seriously that the divine is imminent, it means if you are the divine, you have to treat yourself with respect. You have to treat your body with respect. If the divine is in the people around you, you have to treat them with respect. If the divine is in all these material things, you can't waste resources. You can't, treat the earth with disrespect. It's a call to responsibility and to considered action and to ethical action. And the thing is, while that's at the focus of what we do, I have yet to encounter a religious tradition that doesn't have that concept as part of it. Everybody's got that idea. I think that we're just very involved in trying to share the idea of remember that. You know, wake up to that and think of all the responsibility that goes along with believing that about the divine.
Yes. Thank you, Don. That's a point I meant to make, but I continue to move in different directions.
There's so many to
make. Yeah. And, you know, one of the things I truly enjoy about working with Don and in these situations in particular where we're talking to groups is that one of us will cover what the other one would like to say and didn't get there because they were making another point. And so between us, we cover a lot of ground, and that's really a blessing.
That is. That's the blessing, right? You know, and wherever I've been, the traditional elders, and certainly the ones that I have had personal experience with, say that this is a time of remembering, that one of the greatest opportunities that we have right now is for us to begin to remember who we are and where we've come from. And and that's a tremendous process. You talk about sacred intention and following the call. I remember being very naive and young and innocent when I started on this path with the elders. And boy, did they work, get rid of all that stuff, you know. And I'll never forget, you know, just some of the things that they put me through to open me so that I could remember. And one of those I'll just share, because we've talked a lot about Mother Earth and creation and nature. I'll refer back to Mr. McCua the first time when I was with the Worldwide Indigenous Science Network, and we went up to the top of the volcano on Big Island. And his family, he comes from a lineage of over 500 years where they usher the sunrise every morning. And so he always called, and Pele was very much very important mm-hmm. to his practice. And so he called that particular area his office. Well, he sat me on this mm-hmm. ledge that if I even breathed wrong, I was going to fall right into it. I mean, I'm looking at the earth. I mean, I've become mm-hmm. an intimate relationship with Mother Earth and the lava and the steam. And he puts these three mm-hmm. little red berries in my hand, and he walks away mm-hmm. and he turns around and he says, "I wouldn't advise you to move until I get back." And, what an experience. What I took from that experience was that, other than the humor, because there's a lot of humor with it, but was also the fact here, once I settled down, because I knew that wrong move and I'm out, but once I settled down, and I began this communion with creation at its mm-hmm. core, I realized that the mother was birthing. You know, I'm sitting mm-hmm. watching her birth, and mm-hmm. that I get to be a part of that. And it really changed my life. It really, really yeah. changed my life. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I want to
And you're still part of that birthing process everywhere you go.
Absolutely. You know, and that was the other thing. Thank you for saying that. The closeness, the relationship between life and death, in that, mm-hmm. As I sat there, I watched how, you know, there's no separation even there, that as things were mm-hmm. being absorbed by her, she was birthing out of that absorption, mm-hmm. so that it was life and death was just an exchange of energy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So thank you for sending me down memory lane on that one. But the bottom line I wanted to say was that you talked about remembrance, and this is that time. And I think, Rachel, it relates back to what you said about, you know, we can fool ourselves if we want to and say, oh, Mother Earth is fine, there's nothing wrong, she's been here, she always will. And if we want to continue down that road, I'm not so sure it's going to get us the results that we want, not so much in our lifetime, but our children and our grandchildren. And so remembering so that we can reestablish the relationship that you both speak of is so important.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, thank you both for being on Indigenous Voices today and sharing so much of yourselves and your practice and giving us such a whole way of looking at Wicca and paganism, because you brought the old and the present together for us and really went in the whole interfaith circle. And so I want to thank mm-hmm. you for that. And I look forward to us getting together in California in June.
Yes,
absolutely.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It was a pleasure. Thank you very much.
You're certainly welcome. Thanks again for being on Indigenous Voices.
Welcome to the United Religions Initiative, Global Indigenous Initiative, and Now Time Radio's presentation of Indigenous Voices. Indigenous Voices airs every other Thursday on Now Time Radio at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. Indigenous Voices features Indigenous artists, activists, wisdom keepers, and spiritual leaders raising their voices to bring messages from an Indigenous perspective on cultural heritage, women and children, the environment, our relationship to Mother Earth, preservation of sacred sites, human rights, spirituality, religion, and interfaith. The United Religions Initiative is a global grassroots interfaith network that cultivates peace and justice by engaging people to bridge religious and cultural differences and work together for the good of their community and the world. To join the call during Indigenous Voices on Now Time Radio, call 424-243-9656. You may also live stream or listen to the podcast at any time at www.blogtalkradio.com/Now Time Radio.